Okay, it's my pleasure on behalf of my team to present our four-month outcome data for our study entitled A Combined Lifestyle and Medication Intervention to Reduce CHD Risk. We have no disclosures, but a lot of collaborators, and I would just like to mention that several different disciplines are noted here, and I'm having a little trouble with the arrow. There it is. And also to mention the practices and our health counselors who played a crucial role in this project. Now, in terms of background, coronary heart disease is common, and lifestyle and medications can substantially reduce risk, but adherence to lifestyle is often poor, and medications are underutilized, and when prescribed, adherence is poor. Effective and feasible interventions with a combined focus on lifestyle and medication are needed to reduce CHD risk, but few combined interventions have been tested, and we are not aware of comparative effectiveness research studies that have evaluated combined interventions. And why do I say combined interventions are important? Because lifestyle can reduce risk, and medications can reduce risk. And if they're combined, then they can reduce risk more. So our objective was to test in a randomized controlled trial two alternative formats of a combined lifestyle and medication intervention, counselor-based and web-based, with support from a counselor, if needed. And our primary outcome was to assess the effect of the intervention on predicted heart disease risk at four-month follow-up. Our goal was for both interventions to reduce predicted 10-year CHD risk by at least 1.5% compared to baseline. And this is the estimated Framingham risk. And an absolute risk reduction of 1.5% actually is a 10% relative risk reduction. And I don't know if there's a visual person here, but if there's a laser pointer, that would be helpful. I don't know if we can, because this thing is just late, and when I get to data, I know it's going to be a little inefficient. Other outcomes, to assess the intervention's effect on diet and physical activity, smoking, medication adherence, the traditional heart disease risk factors, quality of life. We also plan to assess the acceptability of the intervention to participants, office staff, clinicians, and policymakers, and very importantly, to evaluate the cost effectiveness of the interventions. And if effective, maybe at the end of the study I can say, now that we know it's effective, we can, at the end of this talk, we can prepare the interventions for dissemination. In terms of methods, this study was conducted at five practices in the North Carolina Family Medicine Research Network. One is an academically affiliated private practice. There are two other private practices. That's great. Thank you. This will be useful when I go forward. And two community health centers. Notice that there is a significant ethnic diversity across these practice sites, with a 10% prevalence of African Americans at one going to 60% at another. And also I want to state that we consider this very much a public health type of intervention, even though it's in practices, because coronary heart disease risk factors are so prevalent. So we're conducting this in primary care practices. Our participants were established patients presenting for routine office visits. They were eligible if they were between 35 and 79 years of age. And we have two different cohorts embedded in this study. One is what we call our primary prevention cohort, and our goal was to enroll 500 participants. These are individuals with a heart disease risk of at least 10% over 10 years and at least one modifiable risk factor. But we also wanted to look at the impact of the intervention on participants with known coronary cardiovascular disease, and so we enrolled 100 of those participants. Now, what was the delivery format of the intervention? Well, the counselor-based intervention included an intensive component over the first 4 months and a maintenance component over the ensuing 8 months. In the intensive intervention, there was an initial face-to-face session that was 90 minutes in length, and then there were 3 monthly follow-up contacts, either face-to-face or by phone, that were 45 to 60 minutes. And then during the maintenance intervention, we had 3 follow-up contacts at 2-month intervals for about 30 minutes. Web-based was similar, but it was given over the web. Same 2 components, intensive and maintenance, about the same amount of time intended, maybe a little bit less, 30 to 45 minutes for the follow-up of the web-based intervention. How about intervention content? Well, we started with a decision aid, and this is very important because this is different from many lifestyle interventions. The decision aid allowed participants to calculate their CHD risk and explore the effects on risk of starting a medication or making lifestyle changes or doing a combination of both. The intervention included general information on lifestyle and medication, and I wish I had more time to explain these, but our dietary intervention focused on fat quality and carbohydrate quality. This was not a low-fat intervention, and it was not necessarily consistent with current guidelines. Our physical activity intervention focused on walking for 30 minutes on most days of the week. I should say we consider our dietary intervention to be literature-informed, though not necessarily guideline-informed. It's consistent with about 80 to 90% of current guidelines if you look at 2010 guidelines. And the medication intervention, we wanted to initiate as appropriate medications and then focus on adherence. There were tailored tips regarding problem areas and barriers to risk reduction, and we had goal setting and specification of first steps. Now, this is a screenshot from the decision aid. The individual inputs their risk factors, which we measured in a standardized way. You can see here their 10-year risk is 39. Then they can put in what happens if they take blood pressure medicine, or what happens if they take cholesterol medication, or what happens if they change their diet or became more active. Now, it was very difficult for us to estimate how much those lifestyle characteristics would lead to reduced risk, because we don't have great randomized trials. But we came up with what we think are reasonable estimates. This is the study flow diagram. I'm going to use the pointer. We reviewed charts and identified 2,274 eligible participants. Of these, 663 consented, but we used their chart information to calculate their 10-year risk. Then we remeasure blood lipids and blood pressure according to standardized methods, and 109 were ineligible because their CHD risk fell to about 8 or 9% instead of 10%. 15 declined participation, 19 were lost in follow-up. So ultimately, we randomized 489 participants to counselor-directed or web-based, and at 4 months, we had 93% follow-up in counselor, 91% follow-up in web-based. The line is where we are in terms of reporting data today. So we're still collecting data down here. Analysis. Our primary outcome is change in 10-year risk. And we perform pre-post comparisons within study groups with baseline observations brought forward for missing follow-up data. And then we have many secondary outcomes. We look at 10-year risk score and other variables for completers only. And when we compare one group to another, and that's not the major focus of this study, we control for a set of variables a priori that are listed here and that we think are relevant. We control for study site and then variables that were differentially distributed between the study arms, including, as it happened, blood lipids and A1C. Now, how about results? First, demographics. I'm going to use the pointer. So our population was older because age is a very strong predictor of CHD risk. We had about half female, about 25% African American, and we had a good gradient in terms of education, with about 20% having less than high school and about 45% having a college or advanced degree. And about 2/3 were either married or living with someone like a spouse. Similarly, there was a gradient across incomes. About 25% had family incomes less than $20,000. And you can see here 10% and a little bit less had incomes greater than $70,000 and then greater than $100,000. Given the age of the population, only 28% were full-time employees. We were a little bit surprised. We didn't think that such a large percentage would have health insurance, but 63% commercial, about 18% Medicare, about 10% Medicaid, and about 10% no insurance. Now here are the data on known CVD, and let me say CVD includes stroke, so it's stroke and heart disease, and coronary heart disease is primarily heart disease. So I said before we enrolled 100 with known CVD, and they were equally distributed. There were 389 in the primary prevention cohort. Their 10-year Framingham risk was 17%. This was a very high, this was or is a very high-risk population. Look at this at baseline, 87% were already on blood pressure medication, 86% had high cholesterol, 60% or so had diabetes, 25% were smokers. The average minutes walked per week by self-report was just about 75 to 80 minutes. That's about half of the goal. The steps per day by pedometer, for those who wore the pedometer, a significant period of time, was 4,400 to 4,600. This is not being very active. If you just walk around with your regular stuff, with your pedometer, which I've worn for over a year since the study started, you get about 3,000 or 4,000 without doing anything. And self-reported fruit and vegetable intake was about 4 servings per day. Physiologic measures, not surprisingly, in the world in which we live, the mean body weight was 96 kilograms, the mean BMI was 34. Our participants were on lots of medications, so blood pressure was pretty well controlled, total cholesterol was well controlled. Among those with diabetes, I haven't separated it out, but their hemoglobin A1Cs were pretty well controlled. The C-reactive protein was a little bit above goal levels. How about comfort with the computer and the internet? About a third at baseline were very comfortable, about a third were comfortable, and about 20% were very uncomfortable. That was with the computer and the same breakdown for the internet. Okay. That's the baseline data. Now, what did people choose to work on? This is choice for risk reduction after looking at the decision aid. I have a couple of special categories, and then at the bottom, I think the real story is here. I'll get to that in a minute, but 20% chose to work on diet only. 39% chose to work on diet and physical activity, and 14% chose to work on diet, physical activity, and medications only. But if you look at all the choices, of which there were many, 96% chose to work on diet. Now, that really surprised us that people were so interested in that. 64% on physical activity, 16% of the entire cohort on smoking, and remember, about 24% of the cohort were smokers, and 32% on medication. That means either starting a medication if they're not on it or intensifying medication. Most were already on medication. Okay. Here's a little bit of process data on the web-based component. This is the need for assistance. So sessions 2 through 4 could be done without coming to the office. About 60% of these were completed remotely with minimal, if any, counselor help, mostly for forgotten passwords, the link to the tool, or some brief questions about the materials. Of the in-person sessions, that means web-based people came to the practice because they didn't have computer access. About half needed assistance. So there was a lot of worry about whether this older population could use a computer, but it seems like they can. All right, now the primary outcome. So this is the primary prevention group, where N is 385 and not 389 because 4 participants actually developed CHD during the course of these 4 months. We weren't sure how to handle them, and we still are discussing it, but they were removed for these analysis. Here's what happened among the completers. The baseline mean was 16.9. At 4-month follow-up, it was 14.5. So there was a change score of the Framingham risk of 2.4 absolute percentage points, which is approaching about 20% reduction. And this was highly statistically significant within the group. And the web-based did reasonably well, not quite as well. They still met the goal reduction, 1.5 absolute percentage points. Highly statistically significant. Now here, we've included everybody putting their change score to 0 coming forward, and the results are essentially the same. Now, this slide shows the comparison of change between groups for the 10-year Framingham risk score. For the completers, the difference was 0.75, which was of, you could say, borderline statistical significance. When we adjusted, as I spoke of with the model, the p-value went to 0.03. Again, this is not the primary outcome. People are interested in this, and cost effectiveness is going to be really important, but we did decide to look at this. So there was a difference here between Counselor and Webb, and these are for all the completers. Now, I only have 5 minutes, so I'm going to go through some of the highlights of the rest of the data. So on this side of the slides, it's change within group, and this is between group. Fruit and vegetable consumption got better by self-report. Fiber got better. Fat quality got a lot better in both groups. There was a modest improvement in self-reported walk time and a smaller improvement in objectively measured walk time. We have measured blood carotenoids, but we don't have those data to report as a biomarker for fruit and vegetable consumption. We've measured RBC fatty acid membranes as a biomarker for fatty acid composition. There was a modest decrease in smoking among both groups. The Morisky medication adherence score is a tool that's used to address medication adherence. There was a substantial increase in both of these groups. There was better adherence for blood pressure medicine, for cholesterol medication, at least in the counselor group, and there was a substantial improvement in taking aspirin. Blood pressure went down a little bit in the counselor arm. The change was about 2.5 millimeters of mercury for systolic and 1.3 for diastolic. Total cholesterol went down more in the intervention group. Remember, it started a little bit higher. LDL similarly went down, and HDL improved in both groups. A1C went down a little bit in the counselor arm, not much or not as much in the Webb arm. You can see here that we split it out into those with diabetes, so they were very well controlled. Still in the counselor arm, a move in the right direction. CRP went down in both groups, statistically significant in the counselor arm. And weight stayed the same in counselor and went down a little bit in Webb. Now, I want to talk about this. I don't have much time. A lot of the people on our team were very worried about weight gain because we advocated a higher fat diet and there was no weight gain. Okay, consistent with what most people write in the literature, but when you get a bunch of behaviorists in the room, many are very concerned about recommending a higher fat diet. I should say nutrition-oriented behaviorists. All right, and what about quality of life? The mental component did not change, but the physical component changed substantially. How about acceptability of the program? I just looked at these data 2 or 3 days ago. I kind of said, wow. So here's overall acceptability, information easy to understand, trustworthy information, helped me decide what's important, would recommend this to others. About 2/3 or more strongly disagreed, most agreed, and over 95% agreed or strongly agreed. I know there's probably some social desirability bias, but older people like this program and like this intervention. And in terms of the intensity of the program, I thought it took a lot of time. It did take a lot of time. But the majority in both arms thought it was about right in terms of information, number of sessions, and amount of time. All right, so our progress to date, we've completed our 4-month follow-up. 12-month follow-up is to be completed in the next month or so. Our economic analysis for 4-month outcomes is underway. For the main outcome, in the primary prevention cohort, 10-year Framingham risk score reduction was statistically significant, clinically significant, and achieve the target goal of the study, and there appeared to be additional reduction of borderline statistical significance for the counselor arm compared to the Webb arm. Secondary outcomes, diet improved, physical activity improved, medication adherence improved, quality of life improved for the physical component. Physiologic outcomes, blood pressure, A1C, total cholesterol, CRP improved in the counselor arm, and these improvements were statistically significant. HDL improved in both arms. Was it the higher fat diet or the improved carbohydrate quality? Not sure. Probably not a medication effect since so many people are on meds to begin with. Weight improved in the Webb arm. An important limitation, there's no control group. Okay, that's an important limitation. We knew that from the beginning, but we thought we were comparing two effective interventions. Last slide, implications. Both interventions seem to be effective, at least at 4 months. Our economic analysis will be key to interpreting results. 12-month analysis will be informative. Dissemination work now continues because we think we have something to disseminate, and much analysis needs to be done to determine in the CER vein which interventions are most effective for which patients under specific circumstances. Thank you very much.